Okay, I want to go back to the Rav Kook, to the original Rav Kook, because you guys didn't have it, and we're going to read it again today. And you have it on the other sheet that I gave you, this sheet over here, that I photocopied from the original Arot. It's Perek Bet, chapter 2, in finished from the original Arot. So Rav Kook writes,
it's homemade.
Homemade.
A lot of sugar.
For those of you listening at home, yes, the cookies have a lot of sugar. Sorry, there's no sugar in the soda, though.
Okay.
For free. Ayideh hidrachut mehakarat harazim ba'ah hakara shel kedushat Eretz Yisrael b'tzura metushteshet. Hidrachut means, because when someone is distanced from recognizing the razim, razim are the shards, the hidden shards, meaning the secrets of Eretz Yisrael, so then comes recognition of the holiness of Israel in a discombobulated way. Ayde hitnakrut el sod Hashem, through the hitnakrut, from the word nochri. What's a nochri? A nochri is a non-Jew. It's a foreigner. When one is foreign from the sod Hashem, the secret of God, nasot haskulot ha'alyonot shel omek ha'chayim ha'elohiyim, the hidden treasures, the exalted treasures of the depth of spiritual life become dvarim tfelim she'inam nichnasim ba'omek ha'mishama. He says the things that are the richest and the most beautiful spiritual treasures of Judaism, because we're distanced from those secrets, from the holiness, we make them into dvarim tfelim, tertiary ideas, secondary ideas. Umemela, and based on this, Yachsara koach yoter ha'adir v'nishmat ha'umah v'yachid. Then this greater strength is missing in the spirit of the nation and the individual. V'ha'galut motzei tichin yitanat mitah. And the exile brings favor from itself. It's almost like, you know, that analogy, we talked about it last week, the analogy of, like, if someone doesn't know what it means to have a good relationship with somebody else, right? And they're in a bad relationship. What do they think?
They think that that's normal.
They think that's normal, and they don't realize that they don't have a good relationship. Now, are they any less happy? No, because they think that what they have is the ideal. But in reality, you think what you have is ideal because you have no idea what the ideal is really supposed to be. You know? Ki l'mashig rak et hashetach hagalui, someone who only comprehends that which is revealed, the area that is revealed, lo yachsar shum devar yesodi b'cheson ha'aretz v'hamamlacha. Nothing fundamental will be missing when you're missing the land and the Jewish kingdom and all aspects of the nation as it is when it's built. Yesod shipiyat ha-yeshua etzlo kuhanap shidadi. So then for that person, so what's he waiting for the Mashiach for? Right, if you're not missing, if you don't understand what the idea of nationhood is and the rebuilding and the completion of the Jewish people, so what do you want Mashiach for? What do you want Mashiach now? What do you want it for? He says it's a nafstadi. It's a side branch. That isn't fundamentally connected to the depths of recognizing Judaism. And this in itself, the flip it front ways, is what testifies about the lack of understanding. Sheyesh b'shita me'atat haleset kezot. That is in this shita, in this perspective, me'atat haleset, I think it means of small vitality. So if someone professes a Judaism that has that lack of vitality, that doesn't have this centrality or this focus on Eretz Yisrael, on the idea of redemption of the Jewish people as a whole, it has a lack of vitality. So he says that's bad. What kind of, we don't want to promote. We have to fight that kind of Judaism. We have to promote a Judaism that understands the centrality. He says, interesting, of hiddenness, because through that hiddenness will come this recognition of the importance of redemption being the nation and the Jewish government and all the things that go along with it. He says, Lo solamim anachnu kol min tziur v'havana hamyusar al yashut. You not negate any kind of understanding or description that's based on yashrus, on straightness. Rak, only what do we negate? the perspective that this shita will come tachmos lishlol et harazim, will come to try to negate those razim, those hidden secrets, that hashpatam go out rachalma, the important great influence on the spirituality of the people. That's a great tragedy that we must combat. The eitza bitfuna, with understanding, with wisdom, with holiness, with kudusha, with gvura, with strength. Okay, so that's so basically, Rav Kook said, look, either you have a shita, your perspective understands that there is some depth, some spirituality, the razim, the hiddenness, the secrets, or you don't. So if you want to say that everything is the external Judaism, then fine. No, but you have to understand. It's just then. What are you waiting for Mashiach for? What's redemption for? You can do everything now. It's like, oh yeah, well, I want it so I can do X, Y, Z plus 2. So, but if you want redemption because you understand that Judaism is sort of shallow now, and you want to swim in the deep water, then you have to believe that there's more to it than just this. There's much, much more to it. And it's interesting. This week I did a Ramban with the women in the Parsha Shir. It's a very well-known Ramban, basically very well-known because I know it. It's a very well-known Ramban. You ever heard that? You ever heard Rabbi Arlovsky speak? He speaks for I think, Aish, or what's the other one?
Arlovsky?
Yeah. He's very funny. He says, you know, you always say, it's the very, very famous Rashi in Erchin. You know what the famous Rashi in Erchin is? The one that I know. So it's actually very well-known Ramban. The Ramban talks about, did the Avos keep the Mitzvos or not? So he is a very, very beautiful Ramban. And the Ramban talks about this notion of the idea that, first Rashi says basically the Avos kept all the Mitzvos. Rashi says that. And the Ramban says, well, you know, I'm sorry to bring this up, but it's impossible to say that because Abraham built altars that the Torah forbids, and Yaakov married two sisters, which is, a prohibition in the Torah. So in the end, Ramban says something unbelievable. He says, well, the Avos, the forefathers, were not commanded to do the mitzvot. They divined the mitzvot. Right? They figured them out through Ruach HaKodesh. He says, but they did them voluntarily, but only in Eretz Yisrael. Ramban says this. This is a... That they were sisters.
Right,
that's only a midrash. She didn't have to get a shot. Anyway, but he says, he says clearly, very deep, he says, this is based on the same words Rav Kook uses, the razim and the sod. It's exactly the same words that Rav Kook uses. Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating is that the Ramban immediately connects it. He says, but understand that the Avos only understood the vitality of the mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. He says, every other outside of Israel, in the exile, the mitzvahs that we do are personal obligations. But I should get you the words. The words are so powerful. Right? In fact, I will get you the words. He says, but in Israel, he says, the Torah takes on an entirely new dimension. It very much caught my attention when I was reading this Ramban. Ramban is found in Chaye Sarah, where God comes to Yitzhak and says, sorry, you can't leave Eretz Yisrael. You have to stay here, and I'm going to give you all this great reward. Why? Because Ege v'sher shama Abraham Chachai says and told us, Ege v'sher shama Abraham is Choli v'yishmor v'yishmatim mitzvotai v'chutai v'terotai. Okay, here we are. Here we are. Okay. Ramban says, I think that Abraham had the Torah of Ruach HaKodesh, right? V'shamar utah k'mi kula k'mi she'enu mitzuva bosa. And he guarded the Torah, like he's not commanded to, but he did it anyway. U'shmirato utah haya ba'aretz bilvad. And he only kept the mitzvahs in the land. And Yaakov, when Yaakov get married, outside of Israel, it's almost like, the analogy I gave was, like, imagine, like, you know, Abram, you decided you needed some good reefer. Right? You needed a good hit. But of course, you wouldn't go down to Detroit and get your weed, because that's illegal. So what would Abram do?
I'd go to
how where didn't you prescribe it?
No, you would fly to Europe.
Oh, that's right. Into what's it called again?
And that's exactly
Amsterdam.
Right. You go to Hollywood.
Amsterdam, right.
You go to Hollywood, it's legal. So now
thank you.
Unless of course you had glaucoma.
And then we prescribe. So with Gabe, but you need some glaucoma.
Right.
So now you as an American, isn't American law binding on you in Amsterdam? Are you allowed as an American to buy good marijuana?
I don't know.
No, it is not illegal for an American to consume marijuana in Amsterdam, and many Americans go to Amsterdam for marijuana. Right? You know, they have the Holland Express for that reason. So how do we think of the Torah? Do we think of the Torah as like American law, like a national code? Or we think of it
for
kosher reefer. Or do we think of it as something totally different? No, it's a personal obligation. So we think of the Torah usually
as being... Would that be before and after Matan Torah?
No.
As a personal obligation.
Personal obligation. Like HaMitzvot, listen how the Rambam writes it. HaMitzvot Mishpat Elohei Ha'aretz Hein. The Mitzvot are the laws of the God of the land. They are. Even though we are warned, we are admonished about our own chovas haguf, our bodily obligations. So it's a sense of it's like a cross section. Like here, we keep the mitzvahs. Why do I keep kosher? Because as a Jewish person,
I
have the responsibility to maintain that fealty to the code, my personal obligation, he says. But in Israel, hamitzvot mishpat Elohei ha'aretzim. But when you're in Israel and you're fulfilling the mitzvot, you're following the law of the land. That's where you're really following the law.
Did that go to the husband of if you don't, then the land will throw you out?
That's probably one part of it also. But you understand what I'm saying? I mean, it's so much more powerful. Like so much more impacting, so much more meaningful. And that's exactly what Rav Cook is talking about. Do you believe in a Judaism of vitality or a Judaism of detail? Judaism of like, you know, this particular and that particular, and you follow this.
Funny on the other side.
Wait, let me finish with that. I was speaking today about that, regarding that different aspect regarding keeping Shabbos. You know, do you? I remember this. I was talking about. You were here. You were there. Do you view Shabbos as like, you know, rule A, rule B, particular A, particular B, or is it like a whole worldview when you enter into Shabbos?
Right.
Yeah, it's supposed to be B. It's not supposed to be A.
Right.
Same thing about other mitzvahs too. It's a whole worldview. It's a life experience. It's the whole thing, and that's somewhat meaningful. Okay, so now that we have that, take you have your other sheets. We already did the first section. Okay, so we're now up to at the end. He says, Rav Cook says, we have to fight against, or we have to, I don't know if he was fight or combat or negate this what he called the shitat ma'atat haleshed. Okay, what the shitat ma'at haleshed? The perspective or the worldview of small vitality, of just like of minimalism, of I don't know what the word I would use is, particularism, right? I think of flame, of power. So what's a small, flat-powered shita?
Right,
no, not narrow focus. Matata lesha means of lacking vitality. It's lacking strength. It's bad. Limited. Now we're going to Yehuda. And I told you it would be. Is where I promised you. Yay. I'll give you an example. Now, if Shimshon referral of Hirshayab in Gunania, to Frankfurt, I'm on page 56.
Number 4.
If Shimshon referral Hirsch lived in Germany, in Frankfurt, Rab Chashuv, while Kabanato, I thought the Shem Shemayim, very important man. He was doing things in Shem Shemayim. But Mahalach HaMachshava Shalom Mitgalot Shalosh Chomshot. In his worldview, he had three weaknesses. One, ha'achat. Hu, hirshal atzmo bikorat al divei ha-Rambam. Right, Rav Hirsch permitted himself to criticize the Rambam. You know, as I brought you Rambam's 19 letters, we've all read the 18th letter. Okay. Okay. Yeah. However, this is what Rav Hirsch says. Not everybody grasps the true spirit of Judaism. In non-Jewish schools, I think he wrote this in German, Yisrael's youth train for their minds in independent philosophical inquiry. From Arab sources, they drew the concepts of Greek philosophy and came to conceive their ultimate aim as perfecting themselves in the perception of truth. Hence arose conflict. Their quickening spirit put them at odds with Judaism, which they considered to be void of any spirit of its own. And their view of life was in contradiction with a view that stressed action, deeds, first and foremost, and considered recognition of truth to be only a means to such action. And so the time brought forth a man of spirit who, having been educated with an uncomprehended Judaism as well as Arab scholarship, was compelled to reconcile this dichotomy within himself. By giving voice to the way in which he did this, he became the guide for all who engaged in this same struggle. Mitzvot then to him were only guides, albeit indispensable ones, leading to better understanding and protection against errors, some of which indeed only arose at one time or other in connection with polytheism. Thus, I mean, he goes, the whole 19th letter is a long criticism of the Rambam's worldview. Okay, you know what I'm saying? They're based on Aristotelian philosophy, which appears where?
What do you mean where?
Where? Where does Aristotelian philosophy appear in the Rambam?
In
the Rambam book. So it takes a long... I never really read the 19 letters of Hirsch. Anybody ever read them? I'm not a Hirschian philosopher. But Rav Tzvi Yehuda does not like the fact that Rav Hirsch... How should we say this?
Found issues.
No, criticized. Emphatically criticized the Rambam. He says, Who lo haya bar hachi de bakerat ha-Rambam? Basically, who does he think he is to criticize the Rambam? Bishum ofen lo. Under no circumstances. Hayu az begermani ashtey mishpachot gidolo shel rabbanim. In Germany then, there were two great families, Bamberger and Karlibach. The Bamberger family and the Karlibach family. Echad yishinei Rambam hibate biyachas kach. Ech shehirsh midaber al Rambam, zo chutzpah. You know, how dare Rav Hirsch criticize the Rambam? So that's one thing. You know, I got a problem with Rav Hirsch. Who does he think he is to take issue with the Rambam? B. The Rashi, and this is an unbelievable. I never thought about this. Yeah.
Rav Hirsch is related to his subject. How is this Rambam?
Well, what he's going to say in the end is. I don't know if from what you know about Hirschian philosophy, or you know, they were not into Zionism.
Mm-hmm. They mugged Muhammad with science and philosophy.
What?
They mugged with science and philosophy.
Right. He was not into Zionism, into rebuilding of Jerusalem. You know.
Said enough to fight.
Right, but meaning, well, we'll see. Oh, you'll explain.
I visited his gravesite.
Of Hirsch?
Yeah, Rabbi Friedman's.
Yeah? Nice. Divar Sheni, Rav Hirsch haya adam chashuv. The Katav Sefer Chashuv, the same, Igrot Safon. He's very important. Man, he wrote a very important book called Letters from the North. In Rayonot Yafim, with nice ideas, Chashuvim and Echmadim Me'od. Okay? In Zeh, very nice, very beautiful idea. In Zeh, Haitalo Istagut Minyan Nihanistar, who Kotev, in that letter, he writes, by the way, he says he has some kind of connection to Inyan Hanistar. You know what Nistar is? Nistar is Kabbalah, that the hidden. Who Kotev, he says, She'en lanu ezek im atzibicha velt, im ha'olamot ha'shvurim. We have no interest in the broken world. Yesh mitzag shal shvirat ha'kelim b'kabbalah. So there's a concept of broken vessels in Kabbalah. B'sitri ha'Torah, the hidden shards of the Torah. G'amrin zayin zehu eloi abarachi. So of course he felt negated Kabbalah, instead of saying,
it has its place, but we first start in the
right. Hashem Shem Rafael Hirsch Hayab Ikar Askan Tibor Haredi Chazak. He was an, how do you think I would translate the word Askan? He was an engaged
a holder.
Yeah. Chazak, strong. Baal Tkifo to Baal Vayanot Yafim, very strong, nice ideas. The Nusach Haeda Haredi is in the Nusach of the Haredi community. Hayu Az Tsarod Gdolot Im HaReformim HaMaskilim. There were great difficulties, great pains with the Maskilim and the Reformim. The Reform community, as we all know in Germany. And he wanted to save classical Judaism. Azu Pasak. Zotaita Kihilot Nifardot. Is there anything? So what did our first decide? He said, we should have two separate Kihilas. He said, it's very interesting. We in our community, we always have had separate communities. So, but at one time, there was no such thing. There was the Jewish Kehillah, the Jewish community.
Right.
And the community was one community. There was unity in the community. There was no such thing as two separate Kehillot. He wanted to have, there was no such thing, Kehillot Yuchadot, the Orthodoxy. Right? There was no such thing, special communities for Orthodox. Tamina Yuvam Yisrael Tzadikim Urshayim. The Judaism, they were, you know, righteous people and evil people. Aval Sader Tzura Ergonit Tziborit Tifredet. But in order to arrange an organic shepherd community, Lachtoch Et HaYahadut, to cut Judaism, Zelo Hayam Yolam. That never ever happened before, and it's I'm not going to read the footnotes, but it's a very deep idea. Yeah.
How does he blame that on Rav Hirsch though? That there was this division of the community in Germany.
No, there was clearly a reform element, a very very strong reform element.
But
they didn't have the same shul. But no, they didn't have the same shul. But they had the German Kehillah. Like the German Kehillot were always the community structure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And within this community structure were these different, they weren't even denominations, they were factions. But there were huge difference. Well, people wanted reform, people wanted all this change in the ritual, that's true. Okay. But there's a huge difference between factions in one community are saying, we're going to cut ourselves off, you do your thing, and we'll do our thing.
So he's blaming this on...
Yes. Hirsch. Yes. Hirsch. What?
Not a tough question. Anyway, they split the cemetery. Eh?
What?
They split the community and they split the cemetery. One side was Orthodox, one was Reformed. There was a wall in the middle, right? Until World War II, then English dropped a bomb and destroyed the wall, so they reunited.
Mm-hmm. There's a number of interesting quotes of the people from the Times in the footnotes. So he says, I'm not saying this on my own. Look at, see the footnote 7? Just skip to Bet. 7, then skip down. There's an Aleph there. Skip down about 10 lines. Because the footnotes are fascinating. They're really well, well done. 7, Bet, Eitzazo. Eitzazo, he says, L'hachzakat adat b'Yisrael. This idea that in order to strengthen religiosity, he parade the gamrei zemizah to split totally, right? Anashim miYisrael haneemanim leTorat Hashem meet mishubashei daod protei derech Torah kerovah, to split the people who are from Jews, from Yidden, from those who are pirchei pochei Torah, people who reject the Torah. He kasha kecharvot leguf hauma bekiyoma. It is difficult like swords to the body of the nation and its kiyuma and its continued existence. Who said this? This isn't Rav Kook. The Netziv, Rav Natali Yehuda Berlin, said it in his Shailas and Tshuvas. So not everybody agreed with the idea that we should have separate community. At all. You know?
We've only experienced it.
That's all we have. You know why we have it? Somebody came up with it. Are we better off for it?
Do you have separate communities?
Yes, you can. You'll see in a second. Hanu, but back to the...
Okay.
Excuse me. Okay, there's Panu b'sheila el harab Bamberger. So they went to Rav Yitzchak Dov Bamberger. And we don't really know, like, Rav Hirsch was the most prolific writer and thinker. But that doesn't mean that he was the posek of the door, the generation. Mihagaoni be Mizrach Europa. He was on the Gaon in East Europe. 858. Dato haita shelo lashot ke. So they asked him what to do, and he said no. Hu amar she'ezo darkasho Torah. This isn't the way of Torah. Lashot perud vechituch tziburi b'yahadu, to make a split, a communal cutting in Judaism. Humayyem kol ayudim kulam you hefker. What about the rest of the Jews? What are they? They're going to be hefker, and you know they're going to be free. Rav Shamshon of Rav Hirsch Ka'ash u'pirsem karuz negdo. So Rav Hirsch became angry and he publicized. He said, Chacham she'asur ein chaver rashai la'atir. So he says, I said it was asur. So Rav Bamberger, b'mkomo, he has no right to say it's mutter. Rav Hirsch b'Frankfurt pasak she'asur lo tadaksim lamshich la'gurim kihila gdola. So Rav Hirsch in Frankfurt, he made the decision that Orthodox Jews cannot live in, under the auspices of the greater Kehillah. Rav Bamberg, the Pasak Lehefa, Chalakalev, Rav Bamberg disagreed. In Cain, Rav Bamberg, Alona HaGoseder. What right does he have to say that something I said it was Asher is now Mutter? Alisha B'Shulchan Aruch, Yeredeya, Ben Shulchan Aruch, it says, Nisakahan Haga, Be'ilchos Yisra Heter, Hashem Bekura B'Yishami, there's a Pesach Halacha that's brought in B'Yishami, Shekola Kalal Azeh, this rule, Shechacham Sh'asur, Eirocha Rashai Rashai Lehatir. If I say something's Asher, so then some other rabbi can't say, no, it's Mutter. That rule, Shayach Davka B'Chaviro Hashavelo, Shu Kmoto B'Chachma. Yeah, that's true, if the rabbis are equal rabbis. Right, but if you or if Rabbi Spoker gets up and says something, you know, and Reuben Feinstein says something, so you know, hey, I said it's Usher, how does he say it's Mukter? You know.
Defer to the...
Right. Rabbi Bamberger, Haya Gon Hagoni Mehadorot HaKadmonim. So this is what Yehuda is saying. He's saying this Rabbi Bamberger was tough stuff. B'gdolat HaTorah B'tzit K'tzitfus. He was a great Torah scholar. Hayef Shalom Ma'ala Rav Hirsch Shu Chaver Shalom. Could it be said that Rav Hirsch was his friend? Okay. Rav Bamberger had gone nadir in Bekubal, lo rak b'Frankfurt. Rav Bamberger was accepted not in Frankfurt only, but Germania, l'nachshav gaon, gam b'Poland u'b'Lita. Now he was accepted in Poland, in Lithuania. Hanitam yikol l'chaver, is he a friend of Rav Hirsch? Achar kach ha'ashim ato Rav Hirsch shehu b'al gaiva. Right, so Rav Hirsch...
Could be Bamberger answered yes.
No. I think Rav Hirsch said that he was that Rav Bamberger was a Baal Gaiva. Haughty. Rav Bamberger, he shirach alav karov l'shloshim ktavim shalshut. Rav Bamberger wrote 30 responsible books. Shechelek adol lehem nishmad. Most of them were destroyed. V'sa'arenu bepra'ot in the pogroms. So Rav Bamberger, you know, this is, he wrote 30 svarim of shutim, of shutim marshal that was shuvot responsa. They were destroyed, most of them. I saw some of his response. They turned to him from all corners of the land. He commanded they shouldn't publish his response after his death. What? I think it's, you know, there was like a whole brisker derech in general that they didn't want their stuff printed because who knows if it was right or not. You know, there's always like it's continual to fix it. It's very, it's almost self-defeating. And then nobody knows, like, who you were, you know what I'm saying?
Chayin HaShevi, that'll be in your time.
Right. But we don't go that way. B'chayavu presein zorim ha'chayim ha'halachuch ha'lachas. Nashim, sotum, chalitza, yibom. It's like we publish certain things. On law, women's laws, on scribes, on chalitza, yibom. B'ashahayavu tzorach ha'lach l'maiseh. What he needed for me that time. He didn't want to be one of those, you know, one of those poskim. He didn't want his responsa to become part of the rabbinic literature for whatever reason. Apparently, you have to fulfill the wishes of the dead. So his children didn't really feel good about that. I mean, he gave a commandment. He said, "Don't publish my work." And so his children, afterwards, he was dead. They said, "I mean, he spent his life doing this. What are we not going to publish his work for?" So they went and they wanted to know, do we respect our father's wishes and not publish his Torah books? Or do we ignore his wishes and publish his Torah books? And the where did the Nitziv live? Do you remember?
He finished in Belozhin.
Right, he finished, but where did he live? In Belozhin?
Yeah.
Okay. Heshiba Arichos Rabba. He answered extensively. You don't fulfill the wishes of if the dead person says, "I don't want you to do something that's good for the Jewish people." No. Okay. Kachu kotei lebanav shel Bamberger. He says, "Agaon avichem haya ilui b'doro." Your father was an ilui. How do you translate ilui?
Ilui. Exceptional and
unique mind or whatever.
What do they call it?
Gaon hador.
IQ,
genius. Thank you. He was a gaon of his generation, but Torato haita Torah shebal peh. His Torah was the oral Torah. Ein lo koach le'asor Torato l'chla Yisrael. He has no right to prohibit the promotion of his Torah to the Jewish people. Ein mitchashev b'vakashato. Don't listen to him. Of course, you have to publish his responsa. Has anybody heard of Rabban? Old Kotev HaNetziv B'Tshuvato, the Netziv also writes, B'yachas Shalha Ratzak Lepei Rambamberger, in respect. Masakatavda Kitve HaKodesh HaLavichim Ateret Yisrael, Tiferet Yisrael. That which I wrote about the writings of your father, he is the crown of the glory of the Jewish people. Hagaon, mitzvah rabba la'asi piskei halachot shelo, is a great mitzvah to publicize his psak halacha. U'mashu b'kesh v'darash shelo l'fartem, and that which he asked you not to publicize. Totziu tefai semu v'todiu shehu lo racha. So what should you do? Publicize the fact that he didn't want you to publish the, you know, these books were published against our father's will. I didn't know that. Did you know? Wow, the Shach and the Prima Gadim are major, major commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. Sheshneim kadru b'chiburayim she'ino mertzim b'kavua atzman b'tor poskei halachot ador. They didn't want to take interesting response. They wrote their own commentaries. They had things to say, but they didn't want to take the responsibility of having their commentaries influence generations. I mean, I can write for my time, but I don't want it to be timeless. Okay, right? But tough, right? We took them. Why? And you fulfill your obligation. Meaning, Rabbamberger said that the children, the Nesiva says, you have to do it. He didn't want to take the responsibility, but he wrote the stuff. He was brilliant. So, do it. In Cain, Kanira Gaon Hazer Eloya Balgaiva. Right? Meaning, Rav Hirsch said, oh, he's a Balgaiva for saying that that it's us to do what I thought you should do. So says But what was their argument about? In the splitting of the community, what was their argument? Right? Their argument was about wasn't about whether Rabbi Bamberger was a Baal Gaiva or not, but he was hiding that. It was about values, about levels. You know, and I think about this now. Imagine, like, you know, like, who's better off? What would the community, the Jewish community, be like if everything was in the model of the Sephardic community? In the Sephardic community, there is no such thing as Reformed, Conservative, or Orthodox. Right? There's only one. There's Orthodox.
But you do think when people are thrown out, you hear how many times in the Gemara they talked about that they threw this guy, they put him in Nidu if he disagreed.
Right, and the Kehillah had power.
Right.
Because it was all one community. Now, like nowadays, where you don't like one thing, and we suffer for this. I mean, can you imagine what our Jewish community would look like if there's only Orthodox Jews? That's what's far in mind. There's only Orthodox shuls. And you drove, you don't drive, you do what you do, you don't do. But the shul you have in them is the Orthodox. Can you imagine what our community would look like? No Temple Israel, no Shaarei Tzedek, no Conservative, no Reform. And that's not to say these people would be more religious, but of course they would be, because nobody would drive. There's no, when you separate in order to protect yourself, you're by definition creating de facto a movement that legitimates itself as a movement of not Torah.
Mm-hmm.
The community in San Antonio is like that, where it's only is basically an Orthodox shul.
Uh-huh.
But there's only a dozen or so Shomer Shabbos families.
Right.
But it's they get hundreds of people there for a Shabbos morning.
Is that good? That's great. I mean, that's the challenge. The challenge is, you know, the problem is, and this is something that... What?
In Germany now also, right? Those huge temples used to be temples.
Yeah.
Now they're given to shul. I was in Frankfurt. That was a big...
Orthodox shul? They still have conservative.
They have
plenty of conservative and plenty of reform.
They have several from families.
Ah, right.
Okay? For Mincha Shabbos, there were two people from U.S. and we just made a meeting.
Great meeting.
Right, but for
Shachar, it's
100%.
You know, I struggle with this in our shul. You want to sort of build off of this Sephardic model, where anyone can come in, and anyone is welcome, and they're going to feel like it's a shul that belongs to them. But there's an entrenched mentality about that. Like in our community, like people shy away from that, as if to say that, well, if that person is going to daven in this shul, then it's not my shul. Because I don't belong in a shul where that person would be comfortable having.
Right.
That's an entrenched mentality. Even if the davening were exactly the same, I promise you, if it were exactly the same, take that same davening and put these people in, people will leave. You know, if you go to the Gra, I guarantee you, and a whole group from Huntington Woods comes in, they don't change their clothes, they don't dress like the Gra.
We'll ask them, you know, we appreciate your coming.
Yeah.
But, of course, covet of Shabbos.
Yeah?
I mean, we've had different people come in running through the woods.
On an ongoing basis? Not dressing like Rose?
Yeah.
And if they stayed? If they stayed,
it was usually because they came to the guard to find out more.
If they stayed, they said, no, we'll stay there. We're going to stay where we are. We're going to come in with our strollers.
We had one case where he was driving somebody up. He said, please don't drive like this.
Not drive up. I'm not saying drive up. They walk.
If they're dressed inappropriate?
Not to you.
Inappropriate to me.
And what if they put on a jacket? They put on a sports jacket and slacks on a regular basis? And if 10 of them came, I guarantee you, in a year, half the people in the grove would definitely be cola.
Ooh. I don't know. What the people that have come like that...
Or some other people.
End up changing and become more like the grove. That's what I mean. That's why they came to the grove.
I understand, but that's not my point.
It is a very odd feeling, I think, for me at the cola. Because when you go there, like, everyone is wearing dark pants. Everyone is
and
a white shirt.
Not everyone. You see people
very, very. That doesn't have anything wrong with white shirt.
No, thank you.
Yeah. Let's just say that a little different in the crowd there.
Right, they never said anything to you.
No, they never said anything.
Right, but if you ever wanted to dabble for the owner, they wouldn't let you.
Well, yeah, they've never asked.
That's exactly my point. I mean, how have you come
to
this
point? That's true. If you're asking about have any of those people davened for the Omid,
no.
The answer is no.
How have we ever come to this point that Howard doesn't mind? He's kind of happy about it. How have we come to this point where this separateness, this split, is so pronounced that a Jew would be uncomfortable with another Jew in his shul? I have a member of mine who's also a member of Keter Torah. He loves Keter Torah. That's right, but he loves it because he walks in it and he feels like they value him for who he is. He's not being judged. Right? And that welcomingness, that openness, while in some ways is dangerous, also it invites people in.
I told somebody he's a full Mechallel Shabbos.
No.
Good. If you are, could you count him for a minion?
It depends who you ask, but yes, of course you could.
We would have a hard time.
In the grow?
Yes, in the grow.
I understand. I keep up to that. That's great.
I mean, we would never try to do anything to let him feel that. You know?
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't have to. Come on.
But you're not like saying, you know, you louse or whatever, but at the same token, no, he wouldn't be getting an aliyah. If the guy is a Mechallel Shabbos, he's not going to get an aliyah.
He would understand quite clearly that he didn't belong. Okay, now let me ask you this question.
Yes.
Right, why did the grow with the only shul in town? Then what?
The grow can't change because of somebody else wants to be different.
Then other shuls will pop up.
Well, what kind of shuls? No.
They would not be Orthodox.
They would not be Orthodox. That's the point. So if obviously we don't. He felt the answer was separateness, but Rav Cook, the whole philosophy, and this philosophy is the philosophy of Achdus, of the unity and the need for all of Christ to work together.
But it doesn't mean that you should lower your standards in order, when somebody else has a lower standard than you, assuming that that's called lower standard.
Yeah.
Achdus does not mean that I lower my standards. What it means,
I didn't say lower your standard, did I? You say lower your standard.
Oh, that's how that, ultimately.
Even if you let somebody else pray in your soul,
not pray. Listen, give them an aliyah.
No, I didn't say that. So far, I didn't say give an aliyah to somebody's Mechallel Shabbos. I didn't say that.
Okay.
I said that if those people came into your soul on an ongoing, regular basis, half of your membership would leave.
No, and I'll tell you, actually, they did, and those few people...
What if they didn't? They didn't take on your uniform, they didn't become...
We had one guy, for instance, who became from and literally changed. Now he just got married, a wonderfully nice fellow. He moved to Monty, and he went to our Samaya.
And
a number that I like there.
What if they don't? What if he stayed?
They would leave before they would leave.
That's good. So you're so self-selective that you don't want to make sure that anyone who doesn't fit into the mold, it doesn't belong, would leave.
They would leave to find some place where they felt they could do what they wanted to do and still be.
So this is my struggle because my shul is much less like that, but still to some degree.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? Why? Because that's the mentality we have. We are not an inclusive mentality. We are a separatist mentality. We have to be Orthodox. Because if we were just Jewish, and we welcomed everyone, then we would not be defining ourselves. But that's not Judaism. Judaism
would be letting our guard down. That what happens to the next generation?
What happens? Okay. Somehow the Sephardim, they perpetuate the next generation, don't they?
Yes, it is.
Better than we do, almost.
That depends on the Sephardim. I think you should buy some blue shirts.
I have.
Yes, yes.
Not the job.
The difference is, okay, if someone comes...
Are we better off this way? I personally believe the answer is no. By a long shot.
But you have to consider this time. If someone comes to you, and they may not be dress problems, but at least they're not saying, I'm going to change Judaism.
Right.
You wouldn't let that happen.
No, I would not let them change.
What
do you mean let? But the question is, then, do you say, in order to preserve, I have to cut off?
I don't know for sure.
You know, when a person says, God forbid, yes, he said, God forbid, you have gangrene, right, in your foot.
And otherwise it will spread.
And they amputate it.
What
does amputation do to the person?
It allows to save the rest of the body, but it destroys that part.
Right.
Totally.
So is a person complete without a foot?
Is a person complete with a green foot?
What?
Is a person complete with a gangrene
foot? Obviously, in certain cases, you have to cut.
Right.
But the person is not complete. Meaning, was the infection so dangerous that it would have destroyed the body? That's the only time you ever cut off a foot.
That's the potential.
Is if the infection is so dangerous that it will kill.
That's what.
Did Hurst believe it would kill the German Jewish community?
I would say yes, because he saw how many fell by the wayside.
That was the Machlokes of Hurst and Rabbi Benberg. That was the argument.
Right.
Yeah, that was.
So if you believe that our purpose,
even with our Hurst, take a look how many of the German community did fall.
Yes,
even
you believe,
with them.
Maybe, who knows?
Or maybe it's because of
this. That's what he's saying. He's saying, yes, imagine if the Reform movement hadn't gained strength by being legitimated by having its own Kehillah.
Weren't they gaining strength to begin with, which the Beza reverse came about?
Look at what happened in Israel, though.
It predated
in Israel, there is no Orthodox or conservative or Reform in Israel.
Right.
It does not exist.
Well, it
does not exist.
You're either from or you're not.
There's no such thing. People themselves define themselves as secular or religious.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's self-defined, but there's no categorization of secular or religious.
Right.
Can you imagine if there was? You understand what I'm saying?
It would be more stratified than it is.
It would be much worse. Much worse. Because everything would be official.
The Chiloni hates the Dati.
Of course he does. That's fine. But then he would go to his own for weddings. And he would go to his own for funerals. You understand what I'm saying? And all the problems we have here, they'd be far worse over there. Because we wouldn't be able to trust anybody for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we better off with one unified code?
The Rabban actually does oversee in that region.
Yeah.
But then you have
So who do they passing like? Who do they passing like Rav Hirsch or Rav Bamberger?
Well, then you have the Haredi that's saying this Rabbanut is good, that Rabbanut is not.
Yeah, you're talking about Kashrus. Okay.
True.
That's the danger. There's a danger of this splitting. Splitting is a terrible thing because once you split, when you're somebody's in, a lot of people are out, and the people who are out, it's much harder to get them back in than if you hadn't cut them off in the first place.
The lungs is in branches, right? And that's separated the borders. You didn't say it was still.
Right?
That's what they say.
Right. Yeah, right. What is that? Yisrael, the kutcher bichu,
Kadhu.
So that Yisrael is Kadhu, right? Yisrael is Kadhu, right? So how do you split Yisrael? How do you split that which is one?
To say, it's called Zeman, Shinikri Yisrael.
Let's just finish up with this. Mitoch kach, nimshechet ha-chulsha shlishit. So based on all of these things, through these things come the third weakness of the Hirshian philosophy. The yachas le-Eretz Yisrael. The relationship to Eretz Yisrael. But how do you come and gdolim? There were many gdolim. Ratzi Hirsh Kalasher. Ratzi Hirsh Kalasher was the Meisad Chom of Etzion. Ratzi Hirsh Kalasher, that was the book we were going to read that we decided not to do. Ratzi Hirsh Kalasher. Rav Eliyahu Gutman, Umacher, Shneim Ayu Chaverim Yuchadim, they were friends, and they were specifically the La'avut, Shavidusha B'yachos Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael. They were very, very passionate about settling the land of Israel. Rav Gutmacher היה גם מקובל ברבי. He was a mekubal, he was a rabbi. Yesh chalifat michtavim b'neim ha'aretz Yisrael. They exchanged letters. Rav Kalischer kotev sheyesh hitya'anenut gam etel Rav Bamberger. V'gam etel Rav Azriel Hildesheimer. So he writes that, you know, these other rabbis, Bamberger was interested, Rav Hildesheimer, loit la'avut, I mean, they were not passionate, but they were interested in building the land of Israel. Hu kotev, he writes, katati de Rav Hirsch, yazir gam hu, I asked Rav Hirsch to help. Hu itnaged. He opposed. Shalach li b'tshuva. Masha Adoni choshev, the mitzvah rabbi, says that which you rabbis think is a great mitzvah, zeh neni chidu shel Rav Kalischer, harei chazal amru, sheshkula yishivat eretz yisrael kedegel kol ha'tirgul. He says, by the way, he says, well, you know, and by the way, Rav Kalischer didn't make this up.
Right?
So he continues, Masha Adoni choshev, the mitzvah rabbi, ani choshev la'avira lo ktana.
Wow.
You think to sell the land of Israel is a great mitzvah?
I'm saying it's not a small mitzvah.
It's not a small sin.
Right.
The Haredi community was totally and diametrically opposed to any form of Zionism whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Now, by the way, today, I don't know, they would not recognize that it was a mistake back then, but Haredim are not anti-Israeli.
Right. They would say at the time it called for it, today it's different.
Why? Why can't you just say we were wrong?
What they're going to say is they laid this, by them doing it that way, we now have the ability.
If they had, imagine what Israel would be like if the religious community, and this is what, remember what was
right there. They're in mass.
Yeah, this is what, what's his name, Batesha wrote. He wrote, like, crying his eyes out. Can you imagine if Rav Hirsch had embraced it, and Haredim had embraced it, and then, it's, you know, and they had moved there, like, in mass, if they had decided, you know, okay, we're going to embrace Eretz Yisrael. Instead of rejecting it and relegating it to the realm of the secular Zionists.
Did they truly believe that the world governments would have allowed them?
Nobody believed it. Who believed anything? Nobody thought anything.
But I'm asking you, looking back in retrospect.
Nobody believed it. Secular Zionists didn't believe it. They thought it was a miracle. Mm-hmm. That was the point. They thought it was sinful because the secular did it. And that's the problem with cutting off. Because if they take it, we can't. It's now chazer treif.
Right.
And the problem is to make something chazer treif. It's a mitzvah. It's good.
Would you repeat the quote?
What mashik vodo choshev mitzvah rabba, that which is honored considers a great mitzvah. Ani choshev la'avera lo ktana. I think it's not a small sin. Not a small sin. In Cain, if so, yesh kan shalosh chushot v'yachas shoshani, three weaknesses. Before the Rambam, the criticism of the Rambam, he stagnated in Sitrei HaTorah Vayachas Eretz Yisrael, right? Refraining, holding back from the, or relating to the hiddenness of the hidden secrets of the Torah, in relation to Israel. Zohi Dugmat Chamifa. This is a very strong example of Shita Me'atat HaLeshed, right? A perspective of small vitality. Hidrachut. Mm-hmm. By the way, the glorious community in now. I would not say it's the strongest community in the world.
No, it's
the glorious community.
That's not what it was.
Right, the German Jewish community. It waned.
New people are coming in.
It waned. Right. The German Jewish community really.
German.
You know what they said though? After the war, the reason why the German Jewish community did not make it yeshiva-wise and the Litvish yeshivas did build up.
Yeah.
I heard this many a time. Because the German Jewish communities considered everything Kehillah. And the Litvische did not. They considered it Zichalein. For instance,
what's Zichalein?
It's my yeshiva. When somebody made a yeshiva, I made it. I want my Adim or my Russian. My, even Torah doesn't continue like you have to, but even we don't have rabbis, but yeah. They still say, well, what did I put the ownership for? Yeah. As when you have that personal Nagia, that remains. If it's a killer thing, nobody has the personal nagiya. Just say it's got to be. That's something that nobody will rise to the occasion when it's necessary, and that's why it petered out.
Okay. That's what Rav Cook would argue and say. It petered out because in its ideology it lacked vitality.
Right.
So it did not resonate with the people on some fundamental level.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a sense of surface.
This was
a lack of depth.
Before the war?
Well before. It hurts well before the war. Okay. one of the three principles, last four lines, Hidrachut mehakarat harazim, distancing from recognizing the secrets. Hidnakrut el sod Hashem, strangeness or separateness from the secrets of God. Hein hein shegomot liyachazeh klapei Eretz Yisrael, they cause this negative relationship to Eretz Yisrael. Klapei hasod yushal Eretz Yisrael, we're getting the secretness, the hiddenness of Eretz Yisrael. Klapei amkut, the depth, the chiyuniyut, and the obligatoriness of Eretz Yisrael. Kol zesherach amkut sodot ha-Torah, all this is relates to the depth of the hiddenness, the hidden Torah, the secrets. Sodot se'amunah, the secrets of faith. Zel mekor yachas ha-orthodoxia l'kedushat Eretz Yisrael. This is the fundamental fountain, the source of our relationship to Eretz Yisrael. Mash nikra etel abba harav, what my father called, shita ma'ata taleshet. A perspective lacking in vitality. And he felt that this was something sorely lacking, sorely mistaken in their perspective, and, you know,
his father never took her first to task.
If you look in the footnotes, I'm not sure if his father did or not. One second. If you look at footnote, it's footnote number 7. Yeah.
We looked at Bays before in 7.
Look at Gimel and Dalet.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? The rabbi was very, he said, the rabbi was against, Rav Cook was against this idea of Preda. I don't know if he said specifically about the German Jewish community, but it wouldn't surprise me if he had. Like, I get a sense also that Rav Tzvi Yehuda, a lot of these shiur, he didn't make up on his own. This is Torah Sabosa of the Yada, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That this is what he's, you know, he probably asked his father when he read the book, what do you mean?
Right.
You know, because Rav Cook was just like very, like out there. So, did you mean anything? Maybe made up on his own. Hard to know. Okay, we'll continue next week.